There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve. Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 750, March 19th, 2018. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say the wait is almost over. Someone will add to the four. Back to you, Mr. JP Morgan of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Fernando is a new man this season, says McLaren. If Renault don't deliver, will Alonso fire back? We have Tech Talk with Tim, and this week's special interview is with Oliver Askew. And once again, I need to remind you, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you want to. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. I was in Toronto area for the past few days and took the opportunity to visit Mossport Track, which is now known as Canadian Tire Motorsports Park. It was about minus seven when I got there. And this is important to me, you know. The very first Canadian Formula One Grand Prix was held there in 1967 and was won by a gentleman you and I had the immense pleasure and honor of meeting at Laguna Seca some years ago, Sir Jack Brabham. You remember that meeting, right?
What? I can't hear you.
Exactly. In 1971, Mark Donohue made his F1 debut there and finished on the podium in a Roger Penske entered McLaren behind Jackie Stewart and Ronnie Peterson. So quite a start to Mark on his Formula One road. And on a sad note, Manfred Winkelhock lost his life here in a sports car race in 1985. And all these historical events are important in my racing memoir, and I was happy to visit the track. It is way out in the boonies, and I'm hoping to take my nephew there to a race in the near future. And now we shall move on to important matters on hand, which is the 2018 Formula One Grand Prix saison. What say you?
Well, if it's a Mercedes 1-2 after qualifying, I'll be a very sad man.
Well, it's going to be a Mercedes 1-2 after qualifying, and most probably a 1-2-3-4 in the race.
You're absolutely correct. So I'll just begin my sadness now.
Yes. Well, you know, race fans are ready for thunder in the park, and time will tell if we will have red or silver lightning striking the competition. Ferrari had the fastest time in final preseason testing on hypersoft tires, while Mercedes did not even bring hypersoft to their Barcelona party. And according to Mr. Senor Eldo Costa, their technical chief at Mercedes, he said their tire selection was made before Hypersoft were available, so no hidden agenda or sandbagging. Do you buy this story?
No, I don't buy anything about anybody.
You don't trust anybody now?
No, I'm very, very cynical and leery of everybody.
Wow. And one can only hope that Ferrari has made some enough improvements to their package from last year, where Vettel can rattle Hemi and Roscoe's cage on a regular basis. In similar equipment, I think we will have a serious dog-eat-dog scenario this season, and only time will tell how it works out. General consensus among the media men and women is that Mercedes still has the upper hand, and I have to agree with that. They have done race simulation, and both drivers and team personnel feel confident their winning ways will continue. And while Lewis is going for Fangio equaling fifth championship, Mercedes is going for five consecutive championships, like Ferrari in the Schumacher, Ross Brawn, and Jean-Todd Halcyon days. Do you see any threat to Mercedes, or do you think it's another championship wrapped up already for LCH?
I'm not sure, because, you know, you can't tell really from testing. Everybody's saying that Ferrari made some huge advancements towards reaching that spot in the sky, but we'll find out. We'll know next weekend.
Oh, that is for sure. The red scare for Mercedes may come not only from Ferrari, but also from Red Bull. Any improvement from 3 race wins last season will take a lot of points from the usual championship suspects. Last few years, they have taken their time to get going during the season. I will be surprised if they, meaning Red Bull, can mount a serious challenge from the opening few races. There is no denying they probably have the best drama pairing. A lot will depend on the speed and reliability from their off and on friends at Viry-Châtillon. And you know who that is.
Indeed I do.
Yes. And speaking of Viry-Châtillon, their engines have replaced GP2 engines at McLaren, but McLaren are having their own issues. I read that Mercedes completed the most laps or mileage, and on the other spectrum was McLaren, which is how sad, you know. According to Mr. Zach Brown, the new cars are so tightly packaged, even to change a small part, it takes several hours, and they lost a lot of time there in Barcelona. And Nando's spinning wheel did not help. As they say in that song by that same name, what goes up must come down. And well, they have been down and out for the past 3 seasons. Let's hope, for the sake of F1 and Nando's global fan base, and he has a pretty big fan base in San Jose, California, they can make some podium appearances in 2018. But what a day it will be when sporting headlines say Alonso wins in a McLaren. And I was at Monza when he won the Italian Grand Prix in a McLaren, which was a very impressive performance, I have to say. And his first win for McLaren in only his second start for the team was also what you would call machismo impressive in Malaysia back in the day. Do you think seriously that Nando will win a race?
I don't know. To be honest with you, with all the reliability issues they had McLaren has been so unaccustomed to winning that they seem to be fumbling the ball quite a bit at Barcelona with reliability issues having to do with simple things like fastening the wheel to the car.
Yes. And, you know, with all their heritage, pedigree, and winning ways, McLaren has gone through lean times like any other top F1 team. And this is long before the second marriage with Honda in the hybrid era. Hard to believe there was even an Adrian Newey-designed McLaren, which was never raced. And their last few seasons with Mercedes power were not peppered with wins. Alonso has not won a Drivers' Championship since 2006. And I believe McLaren has not won a Constructors' Championship since 2008. So let's hope they have a happy tune 10 years after. Only time will tell, Mr. Rogers.
10 years after, one of my favorite bands. Thank you.
I know. You are the bandmaster. Now, Haas F1, they have impressed even Lewis Hamilton, so they must be doing something right. Mr. Romain Grosjean from Geneva is Captain America at this North Carolina-based team. They have been showing good speed in preseason testing, and it will be great to see them on podium this year. If the package remains quick and reliable, we can expect some strong performances from their number two also, Mr. Kevin Magnussen. Let's not forget, he was second in his Grand Prix debut some years ago with McLaren, and then before that dominated the World Series by Renault Championship before arriving in the top league. I don't think Nando will win a race, but I do expect him to be on podium a few races. And it will be very nice to see Haas F1 get a podium or two also. Now, as far as whining on the radio is concerned, I just hope Romain is put on the Elvis Presley program by Gunther Steiner. A little more action, a little less conversation.
Bravo, bravo, bravo.
Your thoughts on Haas F1?
Yeah, very impressive. But you know what? They have a good package. I think Ferrari has kicked it up a notch in terms of their sharing data and what have you. I just can't wait for Melbourne. I can't wait to see Sauber with the Alfa Romeo logo on the side of the car. It's going to be machismo.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, MotoGP has started, IndyCar has started, of course NASCAR has started, and now the big 800-pound gorilla is going to wake up in Albert Park. And I've been excited for almost several weeks now. Okay, Force India. It is no trade secret that Esteban Ocon has rattled Sergio Perez's cage, and I expect the rivalry to intensify at the Pink Panther Brigade. Esteban will make a strong case to be teammate to LCH in future if he can overpower Perez this season, which, you know, it's not going to be easy as Perez is quick and pretty feisty, as Jenson Button found out when they were teammates, and of course also has a lot of experience than Ocon. The team is looking for new owners, possibly energy drink company by the name of Rich. The current team owner, high-flying Dr. Vijay Mallya, is grounded in England as the Indian government has cancelled his passport. They were pretty sure that they would make the announcement by Melbourne, which may still happen, but lately things have gone quiet on that front.
Very quiet. I haven't heard nothing from nothing. Vijay is sitting fat and happy.
Oh, yeah, that he is. He owns some fantastic property in Sausalito, California also.
I know. Everybody goes there to hang out and look at the cars.
Yeah, you've been to his car selection, right? Collection?
I have.
Very impressive, huh?
Very impressive. Money is definitely there and present.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, now we talk about your dear heart team, Renault. According to their own professor, and we all know who, they are still in the building up phase. While they are not expecting wins, it will be great to see Nico Hülkenberg get his long-awaited and much-deserved podium finish. He has a young challenger, or as you say, whippersnapper, within the team in the form of Carlos Sainz Jr., and I just hope they do not turn into the whole situation there as a Perez-Ocon situation, which I don't think is going to happen.
No, these guys are, you know, they're mature adults.
And professionals, like you would say.
Exactly.
Okay, next we talk a little bit about Toro Rosso. Franz Tost and his Minardi people must have met the nicest people on a Honda power package. Not sure if Toro Rosso is turning Japanese, but they have been turning quick laps in Barcelona and with reliability. Let's hope for everybody's sake that this trend is also translated in pure racing conditions. In Brendan Hartley, Dr. Marco has done the unimaginable, given a second chance to one of his machete victims, and that list is very long, as we all know. I hope he makes the most of it. His teammate is a young man from Rouen, Pierre Gasly, a driver with 2 years of experience with GP2 engines, winning the championship in his second year. And here is my wish for the F1 season, Clark, and I hope it comes true. I would love to see Toro Rosso get a podium this season before McLaren, and when the driver, be it Kiwi or Gasly, cross the finish line, scream on the radio, "Karma."
You really like that, don't you, Nasser?
Karma is my favorite. You know what really I like about Karma? It was not said about Sebastian Vettel or Lewis Hamilton or, you know, some legend of the sport. It was about Julian Palmer. I mean, that's what really gets the giggles going for me.
You mean it was a wasted karma?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And let's see how quiet Alonso, how long he stays quiet, especially if they're having problem with their Renault package. You know, Renault was saying that Toro Rosso last year were not following their startup procedure. That's why they were having these issues. Well, who knows what the truth is. But like they say, some engines are more equal than others.
We shall see. There's also spark plugs and alternators.
Oh, yes. And, of course, casings from Mali. Remember when Ferrari threw them under the bus?
That was my favorite.
The piston Mali, yeah. Is there anything but the engine? That's the beauty of new Formula One. Okay, let's talk about new faces. Charles Leclerc. I first heard of this young man from my friend Olivier Menu, who used to work for Nicolas Todd's driver management company. He told me this kid was a special talent. And so I went to Vegas in 2012, I believe it was, to interview Charles at the SCUSA karting event. Interestingly, that event was won by Lance Stroll, and Max Verstappen was also in this race. Last season, Charles won the F2 championship in his rookie year, always very impressive. His win in the final race in Abu Dhabi was very impressive, and it was so impressive that I watched it a few times on DVR, and it's very, very impressive performance. Prior to that, he was champion in GP3 and Formula Renault Euro Cup. Based on what I have heard about this kid, this is a serious young man determined to get a seat in F1 at Ferrari. His performance in F1 this season will be watched by many in Maranello very closely. Job number one for him will be to dominate teammate Marcus Ericsson and not make silly mistakes. If he can outscore Ericsson, this is easier said than done. But if he can outscore Ericsson 2-1, and if there is another NyQuil-induced performance from Kimi Raikkonen, then chances are he can move from an Alfa Romeo-branded car to a car with a prancing horse. What say you? How do you think Charles will do, especially compared to Marcus Ericsson?
I think he's going to rattle Marcus's cage. That's what I think. He is a talent, and Ferrari would be wise to sign him up for 2019.
Yes, yes, very true. Okay, the next is comrade Sergei Sirotkin from Russia with Love and Lots of Rubles. He is fast and erratic, but I will not call him crash-prone, otherwise we would name him Maldonado of Moscow, even though he's from St. Petersburg like comrade Putin. Some years ago, he was announced as reserve driver at Sauber with sponsorship from Russian helicopters, but somehow the bag of money did not land at the Hinwheel helipad. His financial backing this time around is from S&P Bank, owned by two brothers who are big motorsports fans and big cronies of comrade Putin, but that's the way it goes in certain parts of the world. If Sergei can sink Stroll's Sunseeker board, and this is what I would like to get your take on it. If Sergei can sink Stroll's Sunseeker board, it will not be a good reflection on Lance's F1 CV to be beaten by a rookie teammate. Claire Williams may not be able to see billions and billions of stars Professor Carl Sagan could see, but she sure can see billions and billions of dollars that are possessed by the papas of her two pilots and keep them in F1 orbit for a while. Lance Stroll versus Sergei Sirotkin. How will it work out, sir?
I think Lance Stroll is going to just be fine. I mean, Sirotkin will be under pressure, but I think Lance Stroll is going to come out on top, and Claire Williams will be laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah, which I think she's already doing every day.
Every day.
Yes. Yeah, so they must have made a lot of money from these two drivers.
Oh, they did, and they are going to continue making money. The printing presses in Russia are going as fast as possible.
Yes, they shifted the printing in the to the gulags.
To the gulags, yes, exactly. So, right. I don't know. We'll see what happens next week. That's going to be the fun part, to see who really is the dominant factor.
Yes. Do you think we'll see a first-time Grand Prix winner this year?
I think there will be.
Who could it be, given the package?
The package. I don't know. It could be Hülkenberg. If something crazy happens.
Yeah, I think if something crazy happens, then I would give the nod to Nando.
And Machismo.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'm worried about McLaren. They look pretty clumsy out there. They're not the tight team they were 10 years ago. So, I don't know. I think even Fernando is worried.
Well, if things keep going for McLaren like this, who knows? Ron Dennis may buy out whoever the Mumtalakat, whatever the Mubadala people are from Bahrain. Do you think it's possible that Ron Dennis can come back at McLaren someday?
No, he's too up there in age. He's tired. It would be a group of investors of some sort, but not Ron Dennis. He's done. Ron Dennis is done.
No, I don't think he's going to be invited by the present regime, but if there can be a palace coup or, I mean, this team cannot continue like this.
That's true. And Ron Dennis is probably pretty embarrassed.
Yeah. And, everybody used to complain that Ron Dennis, even when they were not winning, he would not reduce his, what they call the rate card, how much he would charge for sponsorship. So it's pretty sad when you see such a strong name struggle like this.
Oh, I know. It's very sad. We shall see. I'm concerned how well McLaren will be working with Renault. Are they going to listen to Renault, or are they not going to listen, just like Toro Rosso never listened? It's going to be interesting. And also, if Honda looks very good this year, how is that going to reflect on McLaren?
Yeah, well, as far as that Honda thing is concerned, they had to do something after 3 years. But I'll tell you what will really, I don't think they're going to feel too bad about Honda doing well with Toro Rosso because they gave them 3 seasons. I think what will really piss them off, and I think this is what's going to happen, is they will have a hard time winning a race even with Lando, and Red Bull is winning races with both drivers.
Yeah, that's true. That's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, but Red Bull's going to have a great aero package, great suspension. I'm going to stay very reserved and say right now it looks like Mercedes is going to dominate unless something strange happens. Also, let's not forget, Mercedes is definitely going to come out conservative. They're going to come out where the knob is going to be maybe on 7, and they'll crank it up at mid-season, and then Lewis Hamilton will take that 5th championship. But, like I said, let's just wait for qualifying. That's going to be the fun part.
No, I think that Sebastian Vettel, if his package is not as good as Lewis's, he is, I mean, for him it's a matter of big pride getting his 5th before LCH and vice versa too. So I think he's going to be, he will have new motivation. I think he took some vacation in France, in Avignon with Jean Lacy. So we're going to see him with new motivation in Melbourne.
Okay, I believe it. I'm ready to go. So why don't we take a quick break? And here's Tim with his latest tech talk.
Hey, race fans. This is the first of a 3-part series on car ride height. That's right, the distance a car sits off the ground is such a rich topic, we'll need 3 episodes to cover it. Today, we'll talk about car height and why it's so important to control, all from a mechanical perspective. Next time, we'll discuss the aerodynamics of ride height and what parts on a car are affected by it. Finally, we'll cover the suspension systems that control ride height, as well as a little bit of suspension history. When it comes to car height in racing, you'll see there's a common theme. Lower is better. An important concept in racing, and in physics in general, is the center of mass. This is sort of the average position of an object, a location where an object could be balanced, like a seesaw. You may also have heard of the terms center of gravity or CG. These terms refer to the same location as center of mass and are basically interchangeable for the purposes of this conversation. The exception to this rule is when discussing large objects in space, which we will not be doing here today. When a car corners, it requires a force to push the car to the side. This is called the centripetal force. I'm not talking about the effort to turn a steering wheel, but rather the force a car needs to be pushed from a straight line trajectory into a turn. If you think centripetal force comes from the tires gripping the road, you're absolutely right. When there's ice on the road and the tires have no grip, they produce no sideways force, and the car continues forward regardless of the steering wheel position. The problem with grip from the tires being the source of the centripetal force is that the force occurs at the bottom of the tires. Ideally, this force would occur at the center of mass of the car, but the road surface and the center of mass of the car are separated by a vertical distance. The magnitude of this centripetal force, multiplied by the height of the center of mass, produces a torque, a twisting force, that causes the car to want to lean to the outside of a turn. As the car leans, the car's mass ceases to be centered between its left and right wheels, and mass shifts onto the outside wheel. This causes all sorts of problems. The inside wheel, with reduced weight on it, is more likely to lock up. Additionally, the ride height of the car becomes different on the left and right sides, altering the aerodynamics. Now, it may seem unfair to blame tire grip for body roll. Where else is the centripetal force to turn a car going to come from? A bank track? Not in most racing series. Aerodynamics? Nope, not unless you have a huge rudder like on an airplane. And maybe F1 engineers would be creative enough to try something like that, except movable aerodynamic devices are banned. So because the body roll torque is a function of force and height, engineers work to reduce the height of the center of mass. In fact, they obsess over this. The Ford GT40 was even named for its overall height, 40 inches. The dry sump oil systems in F1 engines are designed to quickly scavenge oil from the bottom of the engine, pump it to a reservoir beside the engine, and then pump the oil back up to the top to recirculate, without giving the oil a place to sit underneath the engine. Without the need for a place to collect at the bottom, the engine can be moved lower to the ground, lowering the center of mass. More pumps means more chances for mechanical failure, so one might expect the dry sump solution to fall out of favor, but the fact that they're used means the lowered center of mass is worth the added complexity. F1 cars have minimum weights, so why is a lightweight driver an advantage? Well, teams must place ballast weights in the cars to bring the weights up to the limit. But unlike driver weight, ballast weights can be strategically placed. And where do these weights get placed? You guessed it, low, at various places near the bottom of the car. And the driver's seating position, lying nearly down with the head lifted just a bit so the driver can see, is also a well-known example of how center of mass is lowered. So I hope now you know a little more about center of mass, why it affects car handling, and what techniques are used in racing to keep it down. And when you're out there on the road, stay safe, because a road car center of mass is at least double that of an F1 car.
Tim, keep up the good work, the check's in the mail. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Like I said, we're at the top of the show. We have quite a bit of motor racing going on. So I am feeling alive and well, and I hope all the F1 Weekly Familia members globally are doing well too. Let's talk about IndyCar racing. A couple of weekends ago, their season started in the streets of St. Petersburg, which is about a 20-minute drive from Moi. Local resident Sebastian Borde won the race for the second year running. But talk of the town, did you watch any of this race, sir?
Yes, I did.
Okay, that's good. But talk of the town was the performance of rookie Robert Wickens. Man from north of the border started from pole and dominated the race. It was a couple of late race cautions that put Alexander Rossi in close second to smell victory. After the final caution, he got a good start and went into first corner side by side with Wickens. On marbles, he slid into Wickens, spinning the Canadian. Robert would later say in the press conference, "Pity is he went on to podium and I finished in the fence." On the other side of the fence, Rossi said he is a racer and went for the win. Paul Tracy, who knows a thing or two about push and shove and then some, said Wickens should have never left that much room for Rossi to slide in. And I have to agree with PT. But it was a very impressive performance by Robert Wickens. And, you know, we have said this on our podcast many, many times over the years. Robert Wickens and Robin Freins from Netherlands, these are two huge who should have been given an opportunity in Formula One. But that's the way it goes, you know. Were you happy to see your fellow Francais win in the St. Pete again?
Well, I mean, I was happy for him, but certainly I was hoping for Robert Wickens to get his first win. And he dominated that race, and to see him lose it like that after all the cautions was pretty gut-wrenching.
Yeah. Okay, now we move on to Sebring 12 Hours, which was this past weekend. Nissan wins the second Florida Endurance Classic. Drivers were Pipo Derani from Brazil 66, Nicolas Lapierre, who is from Nivers, home of Manicure Circuit, and Johannes van Overbeek, who is from Oakland in Northern California. F1 Weekly friend and cousin Felipe Nasr was third, and after a second-place finish at Dirt Daytona, he is now leading the championship, so which is very good. I would love to see Felipe Nasr move up to IndyCar racing with a competitive team. Both Penske Run Acuras did not finish the race. Formula E, man, this was another first in the world of motor racing. Let me get to my cue card here. Jean-Éric Vannes and Lucas Di Grassi. Jeff winning the race in Punta del Este, Uruguay. Second win of the season for the ex-Toro Rosso racer. Our favorite, Sam Bird, landed on the podium in third place. Now, this is where it gets interesting. After the race, Di Grassi was given a $10,000 fine for not wearing FIA-approved, fireproof underwear. And I had no idea FIA scrutineers were going so deep down. So the message to racers now is FIA has got their hands on your hands.
I saw the news. I watched some of it. But yes, the underwear scandal is very, very big.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that should have happened in NASCAR.
I agree.
And for added value, I won't take any names, but for added value, they could have picked some drivers, but it gets mega publicity. It becomes the story of the year.
You mean Danica?
Well, I'm not taking any names. You is smart.
Sweet.
Okay, MotoGP. This was fantastic, man. I watched it with my nephew in Toronto. MotoGP season opener was in the Arabian Night at Losail Circuit in Qatar, also known as Qatar and Qadar, but people know what I'm talking about. Francais Johann Zarco started from pole on his private Tech 3 Yamaha, which was very impressive. Result was Ducati, Honda, Yamaha on the podium. Race winner by 0.027 was Italian Andrea Dovizioso over Marc Marquez of Viva España. The Dr. Valentino Rossi was third man on the podium. Paul Manzarco finished 8th. Danny Pedrosa Barrichello of bike racing was 7th in his 200 MotoGP start. Next round is in Argentina. World Rally Championship. Sebastian Ogier is leading the championship after enjoying victory in his Ford Fiesta in Mexico. The other Sebastian, Mr. Lowe, was 5th in his Citroën. Did you watch any of that, sir?
No, I did not, sir. Didn't get it on.
Okay. Now, back to Formula One. It's been reported before, but it's now becoming more and more official that Formula One is looking to bring back Grand Prix racing back in Argentina, and which, of course, will be great in the land of Juan Manuel Fangio and Jose Fraulein Gonzalez, men who gave Enzo Ferrari his F1 victory. And Miami and Chicago, what he calls destination cities, are also on Chase Carey's radar. But Vietnam, I can only say, Grand Prix de Saigon or Grand Prix de Hanoi.
Before we go into this interview, any predictions for Melbourne?
Well, podium should have Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, and one of the Red Bull drivers. Man, you talk about a prediction. If I could have a wish, and I'm not saying this for a PC moment, but I would love to see Daniel Ricciardo win in Australia. It will be fantastic. The guy is very good. He deserves a win, and I don't think he's ever had a good race in Australia, good enough for his talent. You know what I'm saying? Do you remember when Mark Webber made his Grand Prix debut in the Minardi and got into the points?
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. So I think that would be fantastic for Ricciardo to win the race. What will not be very cool is Max Verstappen winning and Ricciardo finishing second. That will not go down well.
Oh, boy. That's very true. I agree with that. But I predict that Ricciardo will win in Melbourne this year.
Well, I hope you're right, sir.
Anyway, let's go on to our interview. Young rising American star, Nasser, please introduce this young man.
Yeah, this young man is Oliver Askew. He is from Jupiter, Florida, and is racing this year in the Pro Mazda Series. Step 2 in the Mazda Road to Indy program. Last year, he dominated the U.S. Formula 2000. The Pro Mazda Series is equivalent to the European Formula 3 Series. Our friend, Mr. Christy Hardy, has been singing his praise since last year, and I'm happy I got the chance to speak with Oliver about international racing and food festivities. And, of course, this conversation took place at St. Petersburg, and I wish him all the best in his racing career. And we will continue to report on his progress as he moves through the ladder towards his goal of IndyCar racing. Okay, folks, we're here in St. Petersburg with rising American star, Mr. Oliver Askew. Oliver, good to meet you. How are things going for you this weekend?
Good. Nice to meet you too, Nasser. It's first race of the season. Obviously, you know, a lot of energy because everyone's pumped up to start the season. And yeah, we had a great first qualifying session. We were able to start pole for that first race today. You know, it's great to be in the new Pro Mazda series. It's super, super competitive. The car's really fun to drive. And around these streets, you know, it doesn't get any better than that. This is a really, really fun street course, well put together. You know, not too bumpy, which is nice. They're always making improvements every year. So in that first race, we started pole, and I got jumped into one, which was unfortunate. Had some lock up and some contact with another driver, which it's not what we want, but you know, I did what I could with what was going on, and I think went back to about 7th and clawed my way back up to 5th, which it's all right. It's important to leave here with points, so tomorrow we start 3rd and we'll see what happens. It's really good racing out there, so you know, we're just looking to push to the front.
Okay, last year you had a very impressive season in US Formula 2000. Were you surprised you were so dominant?
Yes and no. I think, you know, we really kind of set the tone for the season early in preseason testing. We dominated with that brand new USF 2000 car. And early in the season, and we came here. It was a new track for me, and we still did well. We finished second and first. So, and then after that, we just went on a big winning streak. So I think it was a mix between, the Cape Motorsports with their experience with the USF 2000 car. Yes, it was new, but they can still put together a really quick car. And a mix between that and my confidence and driving style with the car. So, and it's very similar with the Pro Mazda, so I expect to be winning races.
Now, last year, were there some races, whether you won or not, where you were very happy with the performance you put in? Some race that stands out?
Sorry, you can say that.
Any races that really stand out that you were...
For sure, this race last year stood out, my first big win. And then, after that, IMS is probably the most special win for me because of where it was at. So it's a cool track to race at and to win at. So that was a standout for me. And then, the championship there at the end was, just capped it all off.
Series goes to a lot of great tracks. Your favorite track?
My favorite track would have to be either Barber. Barber or IMS, I think those two are—they suit me, and I feel like I'm really confident at those tracks. And Barber, man, I think that's got to be my favorite track with all the hills and the technicality of it. It's really cool.
What do you think of Laguna Seca?
Laguna Seca, so that would be up there too, but it's not on the schedule this year, which is unfortunate. So. I raced there at the F2000 shootout, USF 2000 Mazda shootout in 2016. That's where we had the competition, and loved it right away. I think with the type of corner and the flow of the track, and the corkscrew, which isn't difficult at all. It's like the easiest corner on the track, but it's legendary. I love it. Yeah.
Now, you don't come from a racing background. How did you get the racing bug?
My dad took me out to the track when I was 7 or 8 years old. And, it was a really slow progression at first. We were just doing it for fun, doing some rental carts. And eventually my dad bought me my own go-kart, and we're doing it as like a family thing. And, just racing club races for fun until I was about 10 or 11 years old, and I started doing some Florida regional races, and that's, we might have had to stop racing because it just kept getting expensive. As you move up, it gets more expensive, and I had a big opportunity to race with Ocala Grand Prix, which is a very accomplished race team out of Ocala, Florida, which is very close to me where I live in Jupiter, and they sponsored me for 5 years, and that's really where I got my start. That's where my career kind of took off, and did some more racing with PSL and Borel and karting, and then just made my step into car racing in 2016. So that's kind of how it all went.
When you started in karting, were you quick right from the start, or it took some time to get up to speed?
I think I was quick, but I lacked experience when I went to all the big races. So I was kind of behind the eight ball compared to the drivers who have been racing nationally. When they're 7, 8, 9 years old, they already start racing naturally, where I was a bit behind. I was still practicing, so I was still at pace, but as you just really, really need to hone your skills in karting, which I ended up doing, but it was a bit later than others. So I think I had a knack for it right away, and then once the experience came, it really took off. So,
mom and dad fully behind your racing efforts?
Yeah, 100% for sure. They're all about it. It's a I need a lot of help myself now that I'm in the Mazda Road to Indy, and there's a lot going on. So there's a big support from my family. And they've always been behind me, for sure.
Do you have a manager, or is your family guiding your career?
Right now, I'm part of Rising Star Racing. Art Wilms is an agency that helps young drivers, you know, come to the top to IndyCar, only in the Maserati Indy and IndyCar series. So that's the only series they're involved in. I'm happy to be a part of that program. And I also have the Team USA scholarship backing me and helping me, you know, through... you know, kind of guiding me through this path that I'm on now. So, and obviously my parents too, who helped me out probably the most. So.
Yeah, I like the Mazda Road to Indy program very much. You confident you can win the championship this year?
I think so, for sure. It's going to be tough. I think as you move up the ladder, I think it becomes more and more about consistency. And for sure, we're gonna win races, no doubt. It's just about staying up there at the top and making the least mistakes. And I have a good team behind me. We have a lot of momentum going from last year, and the car is very similar. So I think we're gonna go to a lot of tracks and hit the ground running. And I'm looking forward to what the future holds for sure.
Now, a lot of up and coming young drivers also hired a driver coach. Did you ever do that, or it's been all Oliver Askew on his own?
No, actually, there's so much help behind the scenes. As far as driver coach, I have Jonathan George, who has helped me since the beginning of last year. So there's a very steep learning curve that I'm on, and he's helped me out a lot with his experience, and also the Kate brothers and this team with their experience too. So it's a joint operation. Obviously, I have my teammates and you know, other drivers in the paddock who I look up to help me out. So
now you raced in Formula Masters in China. What was that experience like, and what circuits did you race in China?
So that was my first ever car racing experience. That was my first ever car race there. Was kind of thrown in the deep end a bit, but I you know, that's a really quick car to first race. It's like it's very similar to the Pro Mazda car, actually. But I'm really glad I had the opportunity to do it. I was racing with Absolute Racing, based out of China there. We raced at Zhuhai was the first race, which I struggled a bit because it was my very first time in the car. You know, new country, new people, and you know, I was just trying to keep the thing on track, to be honest. So once I adapted to that, we had a few private test days between the first race in Zhuhai and Shanghai. These were the last couple rounds of the championship, so I didn't do the whole thing. So when we went to Shanghai after that, doubleheader weekend, we did some testing before, which really, you know, closed the gap to the front. My teammate is very quick, Alessio Picariello, who was at the time my teammate. He helped me a lot with data, and I closed the gap up right to him on that weekend. So that obviously gave me a lot of confidence that, yeah, I can do this. Car racing is where I want to be. And I ended up finishing second and third on that weekend there. So out of a great group of drivers, too.
I have to ask you this. How good is authentic Mongolian beef in China as compared to what we have here in the U.S.?
Second to none, definitely. Yeah. There is some food that I like there, that I really like there, and some food that was just way too foreign for me. But I really like the experience and the culture, and I hope to go back, yeah.
Something tells me you're a big fan of Swedish meatballs also.
I am. Obviously, my mom is from Sweden, born and raised, and she moved here and when she was in her 20s. So a lot of Swedish culture in the house back home. And yeah, definitely a fan of her cooking.
And I know you spent time in Sweden. Have you been to any racetracks there?
I haven't. I really wish I could have the opportunity to race there. Never did any karting there. There's some really cool karting tracks that I would like to try there. Hopefully in the future, for sure, I'd like to do more international racing.
Safe to assume your goal is IndyCar racing?
It is, yeah. Right now I'm on the path to be there. You know, just have to maximize every opportunity I can.
Sounds good. Have you had ever any racing heroes when you were growing up?
Racing heroes. First racing hero ever was Dale Earnhardt Sr. Then, obviously, Dale Earnhardt Jr., the father and son in NASCAR. And then, you know, just got the knack for open-wheel racing and started following, you know, guys like Scott Dixon, Ryan Hunter-Reay. Obviously, Joseph Newgarden now is a big idol of mine. Dan Weldon is at the top of my list.
Now, you're a total Florida boy. Dale Earnhardt Jr., senior, your heroes. How come you did not pursue stock car racing and went for road racing?
I think it was just the opportunities that came about. So I think in my area in Florida, there's not much oval racing going on that I know of. And we first, you know, went to Palm Beach International Raceway, which was then known as Moroso Motorsports Park. And it was all about sprint racing, you know, and just open wheel go karting. And there's the road course track there too. And once I got into that, then the karting thing, and that's everyone's like, oh yeah, F1. And which is not a realistic goal right now. So, you know, an IndyCar has a great program with the Maserati Indy. That's kind of how I got fed into it. But the first races that I ever watched was NASCAR. My dad, I think, would watch NASCAR a bit, but I didn't really have that kind of style, you know, personality to be racing NASCAR.
Now, you mentioned F1. Who will get number 5 first, Lewis Hamilton or Sebastian Vettel?
I think right now, in this day and age, Hamilton will win another championship this year. Yeah, I think that's a safe bet. Yeah.
Okay, great. Man, I've been following up your career since last year. Tremendous journey you're on. I wish you all the best. Finally, how about a message for our listeners? We have listeners all over the world. And tell them about your website also, please.
Yeah, you can find me. First of all, thanks for listening. You can find me at oliveraskew.com and all of the social media websites, Facebook, Oliver Askew Racing, Instagram, Oliver Askew, and Twitter, Oliver_Askew. So, please give me a follow, and this year is going to be exciting. So, make sure you follow along.
Oh, do you speak any Swedish?
Prata lite svenska. Yeah.
Okay, it tells me yes, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Oliver. Thanks for joining F1 Weekly.com. Nas, keep up the good work. The check's in the mail. And finally, any final words?
Well, I think you asked me about opinion on Melbourne. I think it's going to be more of the same as far as the season is concerned. I really don't think that in the long run that Bottas will rattle Hamilton's cage. I just don't see that happening. I don't see Kimi Raikkonen overpowering Sebastian Vettel. So it's going to be a pretty predictable season. What I would like to see is definitely McLaren get some podiums, and I would like to see Stoffel Vandoorne do very well compared to Nando, so he stays in Formula One. And let's see what happens, you know. It would be nice to see Charles Leclerc. See, what we need is rising stars like, you know, Max came and established himself. I think Pascal Wehrlein did a pretty decent job. Esteban Ocon has really come on strong in his second year. And so I would like to see that happen with Charles Leclerc. And I wish Sergei Sirotkin all the best also. But, you know, I'm not really sold on this, the William pairing right now. You know, Claire Williams can say all she wants, that these people are there on merit. Time will tell.
I totally agree, Nas. I believe that it will be more of the same, but I just want to give people hope.
But you have to answer this question. Who's going to be second and third in the race behind Nando?
I think it'll be Force India, of course.
There you go. Ocon or Perez?
Ocon.
Good, good, good. Good choice, sir.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Nas. I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Bye-bye. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.